All right, next presentation is entitled Establishment of Kentucky Bluegrass Inoculated by a Novel Nitrogen-Fixing Bacterial Endophyte. Ryan Sebring, Maxim Schlossberg, Peter Kleinman, Jay Reagan, R. Howard Skinner, and Ray B. Bryant, Penn State University.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Worley, for the introduction, and thank you all of you for coming out today as we investigate the symbiotic potential between a nitrogen-fixing bacteria and Kentucky bluegrass. Nitrogen has long been established as the primary macronutrient of interest in actively managed turf grass systems, and upon nitrogen fertilization, the nitrogen is subject to one of four possible fates. The first fate, an intended one, is uptake by the plant for growth and maintenance, whereas the other three, volatilization, erosion and runoff, and leaching, represent losses from the system. Now, these losses from the system do come at a cost, and for turf grass managers, the most prevalent is the waste of time, energy, and resources in acquiring and applying that nitrogen fertilizer, which will then not be taken up by plant tissues. Secondary costs include costs to the environment, such as ecological disruption and also eutrophication if that nitrogen finds its way into impaired waterways. And there are tertiary costs associated with this as well, in that turf grass clientele often do not find the applications of fertilizers to be very pleasant, and they find the sight and sometimes the smells objectionable. One possible way to ameliorate some of these concerns with the amount of nitrogen we need to apply and losses from the system is through bacterial nitrogen fixation, or BNF, in which a bacteria living inside the plant tissues fixes atmospheric nitrogen, making it readily available to plant tissues without those concerns for losses, since it's inside the host plant. This is very commonly seen in rhizobia in soybeans that some people may be aware of. For the purpose of this study, we looked at Gluconostetobacter diazotrophicus, or G. diaz. It is a nitrogen-fixing bacterial endophyte, lives inside plant tissues, that was first identified in sugarcane in the 1980s in South America. It was found to colonize not only the root tissue of the plant, but also crown, stem, and leaf tissue in sugarcane. Further investigations reveal that it has the potential to fix up to 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year in sugarcane, and also produces significant levels of the plant essential growth hormones, indole-3-acetic acid and gibberellins A1 and A3. It does this by establishing a mutualistic relationship with sugarcane, in which it provides its metabolites in exchange for free sugar, free saccharide from the host plant, which in sugarcane is between 10 to 12% by mass. The host species for this experiment was Poa pratensis, KBG, or Kentucky bluegrass. It is a cool season turf grass with a typically recommended nitrogen requirement of 180 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year. And in contrast to sugarcane, it only has between 0.5 and 1% free sugars by mass, which would thus be available to our bacterial endophyte. Our objective for this study was twofold. First, we know that it can colonize sugarcane. We wish to identify if seed surface inoculation of Kentucky bluegrass seed with G. diaz allowed for colonization of plant tissues by our bacteria. Our secondary objectives were to determine quantitative metrics where we can analyze what impacts colonization and inoculation would have on the turf quality. And for this, we looked at density, color, and biomass accumulation. Our experimental design was a two-way factorial, 2x5 in RCBD. We had four replications, and we seeded our plots at 3 pounds of seed per thousand, which for central Pennsylvania was a recommended seeding rate for this cool season turf grass. We did run it in 5 nitrogen levels in order to allow comparative examples between the inoculated and virgin stands. For inoculation and planting, we subjected the seeds to a bacterial slurry in water with gentle agitation to ensure for full coverage of the seed material, then allowed them to dry at ambient temperatures overnight, which then allowed us to use a slit seed seeder to plant the seed into our established plots. We did use an initial melorganite as a seed carrier, which provided some initial nitrogen for the germinating seeds at planting. For nitrogen application for the study, we began 12 weeks after establishment, and the turf grass received 20% of its yearly nitrogen requirement at that time. This was in 2014. The remaining 80% was applied 2015, this early spring and summer, which accounted for the up to 100% rates as per recorded on the method slide. After planting, 18 days after planting, we chose whole plant samples from all of our plots in order to use for PCR analysis, which would be used for identifying whether or not the bacteria had successfully colonized plant tissues. For sampling techniques, we used both destructive and non-destructive measures, starting with visual assessments using a CropScan 87 multispectral radiometer. We had one assessment in the fall of 2014, where we looked at DGCI and NDVI, and six assessments in the spring of 2015, during for which Kentucky bluegrass, that is their typical green-up period, where it comes out of dormancy and begins to put on color and biomass. We had yearly whole plant sampling for PCR analysis for detection, and the plot throughout the course of the study were mown approximately every 10 days to simulate a typical management practices for a limited management for Kentucky bluegrass. Of those clipping events, two of them were selected for clipping yields, both in 2015, 54 and 58 weeks after establishment. Our results for bacterial detection for those samples that we chose in 2014, 18 days after we planted the seed, the collected seedlings were surface sterilized and cleaned, and a root, crown, and leaf homogenate were sampled for PCR detection using established primers. It was verified by nested PCR, and as you can see here on this slide, indicated by the green arrow, we had 100% bacterial DNA detection in our samples for those samples that were collected in 2014. We looked at our bluegrass canopy density results. We used NDVI for this assessment, and we found that there was significant interaction and significant difference between the inoculated and virgin stands. I believe the alpha was 0.09, so we had an alpha of 0.1 as our threshold for the entirety of the experiment. Also note, at the pooled end levels, looking at weeks after establishment, the assessment in the fall of 2015 saw a difference between inoculated and virgin, with inoculated rating higher, and the first three assessments in the spring of 2015 also had a higher rating for the inoculated over the virgin stand. When we pooled dates and looked simply at the nitrogen level applied, we only saw a significant difference at the N of 240 kilograms nitrogen per hectare per year. We looked at canopy density results more closely in that last box. We did see some interesting results that inoculation by N rate with the pooled dates saw a significant incremental improvement at the three highest levels of nitrogen application, 120, 180, and 240. Remember, 180 being the 100% level. For the inoculated plants, those with the bacteria present, there was a stepwise increase where 240 outperformed 180 and outperformed 120. Whereas in the uninoculated virgin plots, it did not demonstrate any significant incremental improvement between those three levels. When we looked at our canopy color results, we used the dark green color index, DGCI, for this, with the technology developed by Carter and Richardson in 2003. But we did not see a significant main effect interaction between inoculated and virgin plots. We looked at it over time for 7 sampling events. None of the events were significant, with one outperforming the other. But we did again see, as in the NDVI study, that at the 240 kilogram of nitrogen per hectare per year, we saw significant differences, with the inoculated rating higher than the virgin. For our yield and vigor results, we did not see any significant interaction at all between the two plots, and for inoculated or virgin. We looked at our pooled end levels and our pooled dates. Again, we did not see significant interaction or significant differences, but we did have a considerable difficulty in harvesting the plant sites. For the dried matter, we had some areas that were low on crop density. We had significant dust accumulation, and high wind and field conditions at the Climate and Research Institute prevented us from getting very good samples. We also had a lot of intra-treatment variability. One of the things we did notice was that seed head production was very variable between the nutrient-deficient bluegrasses. The interpretation of our results. Well, we know that sugarcane can be inoculated by bluegrass, and through, or can be inoculated by Giardias, excuse me. And in looking at our Kentucky bluegrass with our PCR analysis, and with that nested PCR, we determined that yes, Kentucky bluegrass can be inoculated by our experimental bacteria. We had 100% success in detecting the bacteria in tissue samples in 2014. Now, in 2015, the data has yet to be fully analyzed, but at this point is inconclusive as to whether it persisted through the rather difficult winter we had in central Pennsylvania. In looking at the density, as measured by NDVI, we did show that inoculation does affect a greater density at establishment and also at green-up in the subsequent years. Looking at color through DGCI, we found that over all nitrogen levels, it was not significant, but there was an inoculated response at the highest N rate applied, again, that 240. For biomass, no interaction and no significant differences whatsoever. On the slide, we did see that at the 120 level, there was a difference where the virgin seemed to outperform the inoculated stand, but we attribute this more to experimental noise due to the considerable difficulty we had in collecting our clipping yields. So, as our conclusions, we determined that G-dyes, unfortunately, is ineffective at low nitrogen concentrations and does not significantly increase canopy density, biomass, or color in deficient Kentucky bluegrass. Therefore, is unlikely to replace the external nitrogen application needs for an actively managed bluegrass turf system. But I've underlined deficient here for a reason. If we have an actively managed turfgrass system, which is managed at rates higher than 180 kilograms per hectare per year, and you notice I've allotted here the 240 level, this is within line for intensely managed systems. We saw that with inoculation, we had a greater density. We also had a greater color, as measured by the DGCI, but we did not have a significant increase in biomass, meaning for turf managers, such as sports field applications, and here we have beautiful Beaver Stadium, for those managers who are applying what we typically considered super optimal, but for their conditions are the correct amount of nitrogen at 180 or 240 or higher, you can, with inoculation by G-dyes, it is possible to increase canopy density, increase canopy color, but not increase your labor costs, as once after inoculation, there is nothing more to be done with the grass, and you're not having to remove additional biomass from the system. With that, I'd like to thank you all for your interest today, with a special thank you to the generous support from the USDA ARS, Pennsylvania State University, the Pennsylvania Turfgrass Council, and also the Kleinman Institute for Research and Experimental Grasses, which is located in Marengo, Pennsylvania. And again, all of you are coming out and coming back after our break today. Thank you very much. Yes. There hasn't been much research done that I'm aware of into some of the other warm season grasses. With the higher higher rate of photosynthesis, more efficiency in the C4 grasses, it could be conjectured that the bacteria would supply more nitrogen, but it all depends on bacterial localization, where it actually lives inside of the plant, and also the amount of metabolites it is able to pull from the plant. With this, we saw a significant difference in looking at the sugar concentration. Bluegrass was very, very starved. And we also did a study with fescue, where it has a low sugar concentration, and the G-dyes did not perform as well. So I think the number one thing to look at would be the sugar concentration that is available to the plant, or available to the bacteria from the plant, and then look to see different species. But for other warm seasons, as you have mentioned, there is a possibility. In fact, the bacteria does colonize more species than it does not. And it began as a monocot specific, but it has moved into tomatoes, has moved into radishes, rice. They pose it in other species. Yes? We used a Midnight K32, but beyond that, I can't say which specific cultivar we used due to an NDA. Yes? We have the samples for 2014, and we haven't yet to subject them to quantitative PCR analysis. Unfortunately, the samples that we took were only 18 days post, and we should have given them a proper 28 days for bluegrass establishment in 2014 with the conditions that we had. So a part of our ongoing research is to quantify the bacterial load surviving in the tissues. And we also look to break it out between root, crown, stem, and leaf. This has been shown in subspecies, it's been tested in wheat, that it will not colonize the leaf tissue beyond a certain amount of time, but will always persist at a certain level in root tissues.
Okay, we're going to have to hold any more questions until the end, but let's thank our speaker.